Hello, my dear listeners. You found your way to Counter Melody, and I couldn't be more delighted to welcome you to my podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Gundlach, and I'm here to present to you the finest exponents, both renowned and less well-known, of the art of song. I don't know how you feel about this, but sometimes I feel as if the world has turned completely upside down. And in a strange way, I guess that's part of the reason I'm still here putting out this podcast. Even and especially in these difficult times, I believe that the artists presented here may brighten our path with their luminous voices and inspire us on our search for a better future. And now, this week's episode. Hello, everyone. It's springtime here in New York. And not only that, it's April 1st. And you know what that means. It's time for the annual Alternate Universe Bel Canto episode on Counter Melody. And I have a doozy for you today. But first, I just have a couple things to say. First, I want to thank my dear friend Marianne for becoming a supporter on Patreon. Yay! Someone new to thank for supporting the podcast. I'm always excited to do that because, you know, it means that I can keep this old jalopy running, if you will. So, if you want to join Marianne, and who would not want to do that because she is one of the most delightful people on earth, you can go to patreon.com/countermelody, and there you can choose from, well, you can either make a monthly donation or a yearly donation. And I do think that I'm going to be restructuring the different tiers on Patreon, but I have been so overwhelmed with other things. I mean, this is what I'm always saying here, but I really am just managing to keep a tiny bit ahead of that locomotive. That seems to be chasing me down the track. Anyway, thank you to Marianne, and also a big thank you to the spectacular Lisa Vroman, who gave the most magnificent cabaret program here in New York yesterday. Yes, it was Easter, so it wasn't a full house because everybody had other plans. In fact, the friend I was going to go with got sick. She got food poisoning, and I had to find someone else to go with me. I had to ask so many people before somebody finally was able to join me, and she was very happy to have done so, because Lisa gave a program, oh my goodness, it's called Ingenue, Ingenue, Not So New, and she was celebrating many years in the business, many years of performing, and it was just, as I told her afterwards, exactly the kind of performer, the kind of singing that I live for. So it was a true delight, but it also brought to mind, well, a couple different things. The theme of aging gracefully. This is something that is not so easy to do, being somewhere much further along on the age continuum than I used to be, as is true for all of us, of course. But I also started thinking a bit about not only springtime in New York and how glorious the weather has been, but how wonderful it is to be young in such a context. Young and in love. And what about being young and in love in an alternate universe and finding a way to express that in song? Well, this is my way of linking to today's subject, the fantastic, the unbelievable, the nearly indescribable soprano Marie Lynn, who in the 1980s graced the local airwaves, courtesy of Manhattan Cable Access Television, with her unique program, The Golden Treasury of Song. She gained a devoted, passionate following. I became aware of her slightly after the fact, but I had a videotape that Ira Siff gave me, reproduced many times, that had about 18 episodes, I would say, of the Golden Treasury of Song. I had already encountered Marie Lynn's voice on one of those compilations of sopranos performing in such a way that you simply cannot believe your ears. That wasn't the title of it, but you get the idea. Last year, on April Fool's, I featured my very favorite of these, the Portuguese soprano Natalia de Andrade, But today, we're going to hew a little bit closer to home, New York, and we're going to hear excerpts from a bodacious, audacious, chutzpah-filled recording called The Artistry of Marie Lynn, Verdi Puccini Opernarien, on the Philips record label, because so the label and the album cover told us. It was recorded in Europe. It was pressed in Europe. That's how Philips records were made. By the way, it was a lie. It sounds as if Marie Lynn had a pre-recorded orchestral track onto which she cast willy-nilly her vocals, arias that represented her artistry at its most unspeakable. So, with the theme of aging, with the theme of spring, with the theme of youth, and with the theme of alternate universe, what better way to bring us in than two excerpts from this album? First, a playful, rambunctious, full speed ahead rendition of Caro Nome. The purity of tone alone will be enough to set your heart aflutter. And now another young woman, just on the verge of falling in love, Mimi, in her aria, Si mi chiamano Mimi. This is the section where she sings about springtime coming through to the end of the aria. The artistry on display here is simply indescribable. And because it goes beyond my ability to describe it in words, I've enlisted a friend to come on and discuss her with me. He is well known to listeners of the podcast. He is none other than the wonderful pianist, coach, accompanist, conductor, Thomas Bagwell. Like me, he shares a passion for Marie Lynn. Unlike me, he actually had a copy of that LP, The Artistry of Marie Lynn. And since he provided me with this copy from which these excerpts come, I thought it would be very appropriate for him to discuss it with us. So, after we hear Marie Lynn's joyous expostulation to the spring, I will be joined by the marvelous, the indescribable, Mr. Thomas Bagwell. Thank you.
questo trainarone, sono la sua vicina, che io va bien più riderò e importunare.
We're now recording.
Oh boy, I'm so excited.
Yes, and a Schöne happy Easter.
Yes. Now, how often do we find ourselves on Easter at the threshold of April Fool's Day?
Well, I think it augurs well for 2024, don't you?
Well, I don't know. We're not off to such a great start these days.
Well, I think we are. Do you have your Easter bonnet on? Where's my Easter bonnet?
In your Easter bonnet.
And on something on it. Do they still have the Easter parade in New York like they did in
Song and
Story?
Oh, I think so, with all those wonderful ladies coming out, walking down the street with their huge...
Oh, Crowns. Are you familiar with Crowns, the play? It's a musical, actually, about those hats.
They are a joy forever.
Oh, it's wonderful. But you know, when I was but a ute, my dad brought me down to the Alabama Theater in Birmingham, Alabama, where they were having a demonstration of the theater organ, which was then and is still called Big Bertha. And the theater was officially closed. This was the early 80s. But the Alabama Theater Organ Society was keeping that organ in good shape and trying to keep things safe and keep the theater up as much as they could. And by the end of the 80s, the theater was back up and running, and now it's a huge success. So I got in with these theater organ people, and they were just as crazy and fabulous as you can imagine they were. And this was their obsession, was playing the theater organ and listen to old things like Jeanette MacDonald, Nelson Eddy, quoting Betty Davis. Now you can imagine what that does to a impressionable 10-year-old mind. I blossomed in their presence. I blossomed. So I started playing that theater organ. I did a couple programs for them, and I was perfectly horrendous, but they let me do it. And I learned a whole lot about theater organ. But anyway, one of the pieces I used to play was the Easter Parade. So anytime I think of Easter, you know, I don't think of the St. Matthew Passion. I think of Easter Parade on the theater organ. Well, unfortunately, the first full program I did for them, the organ had a little problem. You know, organs are very temperamental creatures, very temperamental. And the bells, the glockenspiel, kind of got stuck. And so every damn song had glockenspiel. I mean, Santa Claus came to town, left, and came back by the end of my program was finished. There was so much glockenspiel.
I remember when I was in grad school, I played at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Urbana-Champaign. And those were the crankiest, most contentious Unitarian Universalists I have ever encountered.
I didn't know Unitarians were cranky.
They're usually
not. I thought they were like...
They are usually not.
I thought they wore Hawaiian shirts and ate tofu.
Oh, these people were looking to be offended at anything that happened. So anyway, the organ needed work, and they didn't do the work, and so the organ developed a cipher. So every time you turn it on, it would go... But it was like the lowest possible note.
Oh, it was a low one. Thank God it wasn't the high. It's like having tinnitus.
So you turn it on, and then, and so...
Are you sure it wasn't the devil?
Probably
it
was.
It might have been the devil.
Because the devil lives at the Unitarian Universalist Church.
Well, he might not have liked what y'all were saying.
I know. Well, God knows. Anyway, we'll get to our subject in a minute, people. But this is very important.
At some point.
Because it's religion-related, and it's Easter.
That's right.
They didn't want to pay any money for it. So at first, they said to me, just turn the organ on when you do the hymn. Play the hymn, and then turn it off. So it would go... Yeah.
It was the intro.
And then it would hold on that note. I'd finish it and it would go.
Well, it was good enough for Champaign Urbana.
And then it stopped working altogether. So then I just started playing the hymns on the piano. And then people were complaining that they needed to hear the organ again. And so anyway, it was just.
Oh my God. Those Unitarians couldn't be satisfied. There was nothing you could do to make them happy.
One morning, the minister got up in the pulpit and he said, people, I am burned out. This is my last sermon. Stepping down from the pulpit, and you'll have to find someone else to take my place.
I thought they sat around and read Thoreau and stuff
that. Oh, well, not here.
They were
anyway,
like, I want to be a Quaker.
So they had to find an interim minister, and they brought in this nasty woman. I don't know where she came from. I think she came from California, and she had a child who lived in Urbana or something like that, so that was the connection. Anyway, she came in there, and I was going, you know, I mean, I was in school. I was planning on going to visit my family.
Was it amusing? I mean, was it, or was it just uncomfortable?
It was both.
Okay.
Because we can, because, okay, you know, if so there was some... one time, okay, I'll tell you that other story in a minute. But
yeah,
first,
okay, I'm listening.
So it was Christmas time and I was going off with my boyfriend to go visit his family. And I told her that I was going to be going away and that they'd need to find someone else. She goes, "You speak of this as if it were a fait accompli."
Oh, that's a wonderful line.
God. And then the other time,
did she take her little eyepiece out, her monocle, before she said that?
Okay,
and adjusted the turban.
It's just as well, because I'd probably speak it and find myself then slapped with a lawsuit or something. Anyway, this other woman, she was a real meddlesome woman, and I remember what her name was, but I won't say it. Anyway, she had been on the planning committee for the Unitarian Universalist hymnal. So she was an expert in everything. And 2 weeks before that minister stood up and said, "I've had it, I'm leaving," the opening hymn was "Morning Has Broken."
They always love that one.
Oh, it's a big fave. So I started playing it and played the intro, and the minister stands up in the pulpit and he goes, at the top of his lungs, he goes, "Stop!"
What?
I mean, I was brought up, you know, in a Lutheran church where my father was the minister. Ooh. Everything was just so regimented, you know. I didn't know what was going on. So I stopped kind of in horror. And he says to the woman, "Would you say that was adequate?"
What? This sounds like Lunitarians.
The whole congregation. And she goes, "You mean in terms of audience enthusiasm and participation?" And he said, "Yes, that's what I'm talking about. You people, you got to get the let out. Sing these songs. This is a joyous song. Get singing."
That's like the stories of Lee Strasberg yelling, "Relax."
So she's a woman of size. She stands up in the back and she goes, "The problem's with the accompaniment. It's got to dance. It's got to dance."
Wait a minute. This happened in real time in front of
everybody?
This was
in a church service. This was the opening hymn of the church service.
How many people were in this congregation?
There were probably 80, 90 people at least.
Did they come back, or did they set fire to the building?
Of course, their favorite thing. They loved arguing. They loved arguing. It was their favorite thing to do.
What is the matter with people? You know, you wonder sometimes when you see things that are happening, like, you know, Congress and whatnot. But then you hear stories like that in a church.
Well, okay.
In service. And you must, it explains a whole lot.
Well, this will bring us right into today's theme for the episode.
Let's slide right in.
Alternate universe bel canto. And these Thomas, I feel like I am living in an alternate universe.
Well, we always have been.
Yeah, but it's become more and more so. Like somebody said something about you opera singers out there. You need to be more concerned about your product. You're all too wrapped up doing things correctly. You need to cut loose. You need to work on your image. And I was just like, oh my God, this is not.
Where does one begin with that?
It was here that our discussion turned to today's subject, Marie Lynn, who we agreed was less concerned with the details of singing the music correctly, or even singing the right words or the right pitches, and much more with conveying something altogether different, even if it wasn't always quite certain what that different something was.
Well, why should she be? We mere mortals, you know, we professional musicians are too hindbound by the printed page. Her artistry goes way beyond the printed. She finds things in the rhythm that we didn't even know. I think she finds things in the rhythm she didn't even know was there. I know she finds things her conductor didn't know were there.
The operatic equivalent of the Shags, in a way. They're just inventing their own universe.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I like that parallel. I'll tell you one specific reason why I like that, among many that I could name. One is that, you know, with the Shags, they had not really heard many popular songs. They were completely cut off. It's very sad that way.
Oh, yes.
So their songs, they are from an alternate universe, because it was like if you spoke in Chinese to somebody for 2 minutes and then said, okay, now make up a book in Chinese and here's 5 years to do it. And then what would it sound like? That's what the Shags sounds like. But Marie Lynn is kind of like that, too, in that you wonder if she has any idea what the words mean. But yet, it's incredibly expressive in her in very operatic ways, just all in the wrong places and for all the wrong reasons.
And this, you know, Thomas, I have also have a theory that the degree to which one can enjoy Marie Lynn is directly proportional to how well one knows these arias. The more intimately one knows
that's
the
right.
arias, the more one can enjoy her unique renditions.
Yeah. So it's not an acquired taste. It's more of an insider taste.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that's the thing. And the more you like it, the more I like that person.
Yes.
I can't judge greater humanity on their response to Marie Lynn, because not everybody knows every eighth note of Ritorno Vincitore like we do. Maybe they should. I wonder if she showed some ankle around that studio. You know, maybe Howard Salat got a little bit upset because, you know, she got a little fresh with it. Well, let's just take a second to talk about Howard Salat, because he's the underdog.
Well, first of all, we need to tell people who Marie Lynn is slash was. Well,
don't you think they know? I mean, if they're listening to this, don't you think they know who she is?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you go first.
Jein, as we say in German. My favorite.
Okay, she's the Maria Callas of the dumpsters. She's the Oscar the Grouch of opera. It's like a trash can version of opera.
Well, everything gets mixed together, and then you pull it out again and try and reassemble it.
Okay, let me refine this. It's not a trash can. It's not a dumpster. It's more like a smoothie that you make, except you blindfold yourself and then just throw things in it and then drink it. No, it's more like you serve that to your guests. That's what she served to us, the listeners.
But you also don't blend it thoroughly.
Well, the blender may be broken, but you shake that thing up and then you serve it to your guests. Okay, so Marie Lynn was an opera star who made, her métier was the television. Her artistry was trop-intime. I got to put the T in there, trop-intime for the real stage. She communicated directly into the mic, so much so that she didn't even look up off the music stand, not even into the camera. The camera did not matter to this artiste.
No, by way of background, I think Marie Lynn appeared, I don't know how she first got her start, but her claim to fame is that she appeared on a Manhattan cable access.
You know, her husband paid for it. Her husband was a producer for one of the big soaps.
Okay,
you didn't know that?
My jaw just hit the floor. I didn't know this.
Yeah, that's where she got the money to do this.
And what was her real name? It was like Marilyn Sussman?
Marilyn Sussman. There we go. With an S. That's right. But it was Marie Lynn, you see.
Her original name was Marilyn, and then she changed
Marilyn.
It. So
that's
she just
right.
put a space between the I and the L and capitalized the L.
So it's like if my stage name were Thomas.
Or Tom you know, Ass.
Wait a minute. Or how about yours is Dan Yell. That's pretty good. So anyway, she dressed herself up in all manner of hideous get-ups and wigs. The wigs alone and the cheap 14th Street or maybe Grand Concourse, you know, whatever the 14th Street in the Grand Concourse equivalent is of cheap costume jewelry that just flashed right in that camera. She'd stare
and the
right.
Rings.
The rings, big rings, and ear. Okay, she'd stare right into the music stand as she sang. It's like the camera wasn't even there. She was in her universe. And she had the Howard Salat Quartet accompanying her. Now, the Howard Salat, they were union musicians she liked to
sing.
Local
802.
802.
Local
That's
802.
Right. And Howard Salat played an out-of-tune spinet piano. It was sometimes three string players, so it was an actual quartet. Sometimes it was just a trio, but they were still the Howard Salat Quartet.
It was usually a trio, and it was usually the same guys. But I mean, these programs varied from week to week to a certain extent.
She kept you guessing. We could say that.
Yes. But I remember, in particular, you know, the violin player and the...
Oh,
and
it
the
was
cello
great
player
violin
was just...
Playing.
The cello player had his music all taped together, so it was strung
That's right.
out on, like, two music stands, and it would be falling and all this kind of stuff.
You know, we could talk about her stage appearance, but let's talk about her actual musicality, because we could watch her on YouTube, but really it's the aural.
Well,
you know?
It's interesting removing the visual from the
aural,
and that's what's so remarkable about today's offering, because you are responsible for this. You. Well,
yes.
You didn't produce it originally.
Thank God. I'd be in jail.
But you gave me a copy of your... dub of this LP, which you had in real life, yes?
Well, this is one of the weird things. All right, so I've always been a huge fan since my dearly departed friend Eugene Brister, who knew her somewhat, at least in letters, introduced me to her artistry. And I found at the magnificent Academy Records, which I remember as Academy Book and Records. I don't know if you remember when it was Book and Records and it was next door. I go back. Anyway, I found the LP with her gorgeous face and wig, but emblazoned on there, it said, recorded in Europe, and it's on the Philips label. And I said, surely you jest. And I bought the thing, but I was
you take
thrilled.
It out and it has a Philips record label
it's
on it.
It's a Philips record. It was a counterfeit. But the thing is that I never opened it because it was sealed. Do you remember when records had, you could get the plastic wrap, but this was actually sealed, like it was a sarcophagus or King Tut's tomb. And I was afraid to open that door and see what was going to come flying out. So I never opened it. However, when I made the great move across the pond from New York to Copenhagen, I digitized my LP collection, at least the little bit of it that I kept. I had a huge amount, and then I just had two or three shelves worth, and that was... So I dubbed that, and for some reason, I never listened to it until this very day.
Right. You told me you had it. I said to you, I need this dub for my...
Oh, yes. I think everyone does.
Fool's episode. I need it. I desperately need it. And so I kept bugging you to get it to me, and finally you did.
And I finally did.
And I...
It's everything.
What's the guy's name who's reissued some of those...
Ward Marston.
No, not Ward Marston. No, the guy who actually put out the Marie Lynn recordings. Donald Collop.
Oh, you know, I know Donald very well. My third year when I was at Manus College of Music, I lived in his apartment. I rented a room for Donald. So Donald and I go way back.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, he reissued...
Bless his heart. He has good taste.
A CD of Marie Lynn. And it has three tracks, I think, are from this album. With orchestra.
But not the whole tutto thing?
Not the whole tutto thing. Remember, I gave it to you and it had just those three tracks on it. So
what
we need to explain too is that...
Well, it runs the gamut in Italian from... It's Verdi, Puccini. There's no Mozart thing,
No, there's just Verdi and Puccini. The record is called...
Oh, yeah.
The Artistry of Marie Lynn.
And how artful she is.
Puccini, Verdi, Opernarien.
Right, in German, yes.
Right.
That's right. Recorded in Europe, where they speak German.
And it features the selfsame Howard Salat, who also led the Howard Salat Quartet, Local 802. But in this case, he is conducting the, I'm sure, spuriously named Belgravia Philharmonia Sinfonica Orchestra.
He was like her Richard Bonning.
Yes, that's exactly who he is.
You know. I wonder if they had like a Svengali relationship, you know, where he called her up and berated her. Or if they were just good friends from way back.
Or maybe they weren't friends. I like to think of them as antagonists.
That's good. I wonder if she wrote him checks or if she paid in cash from her purse. Imagine what her purse looked like.
Well, I... but
very
I think,
shiny.
I think the checks... I don't think money ever dirtied her fingertips. I think the money all came
from
her.
She was too pure an artiste?
Yes.
All right, let's talk about that artiste.
But what I think happened is that they assembled this orchestra and Howard Salat went over somewhere.
Might have been in Queens.
Probably. It says recorded in Europe, but maybe
Europe,
not.
Queens.
Yes, Europe, Queens. The orchestra is actually pretty decent, but what he did was he laid down these tracks and then she simply sang over them.
You could say she sang over them, in them, behind them, around them, athwart.
Oh my
betwixt,
goodness. Whichever, betwixt
every
and between.
Preposition you could name, she does it in this. She got it all. I made a little list, though, about some of the salient points of her artistry that I think we could talk about. You know, even if you hear one aria, it's all in there, all of the things that she does.
Okay.
I'll just go
through it. Yes, you've got a list, but I'm going to play, I'm just going to play something right now. I mean, I'll plug it in later.
Are you going to play the Ave Maria?
Shall I start with the Ave Maria?
Either the Ave Maria or the Pace Pace. Those are my Lieblings, Arian von Ihnen.
Well, let's start with something enormous. Let's start with the Pace Pace.
Because go for it.
That's a challenge for any true dramatic soprano.
She overcomes the challenges.
Yes. Well, she is overcome by the challenge, perhaps. But
both.
Yes.
It's hard to tell which.
Say? Please. Maybe do your intro and then we'll play the aria.
Okay, well, I could say that everything that she does in any aria she does here, you have to listen very closely to the diction. It's Italianate, sort of, but yet she breathes in the middle of the word, sometimes twice. She has her own sense of rubato. You know, her sense of rubato is kind of like the way some of the denizens of Fairway on Broadway in the 70s shop. You know, the cart just sort of veers from one side of the lane to... She kind of veers from one part of the phrase to the next, and you don't know. I don't think she even knows where she is in the phrase. But it doesn't matter because she has her hand on Verdi in this, and he's telling her what, you know, she's like, Verdi, take the wheel. And he does. She's driving blind.
It's sort of like Rosemary Brown, the, you know, the musical medium.
That's right. That's
it's like
right.
She's channeling Verdi.
What do they call that? Automatic writing? Well, she's an automatic opera singer. So her chest voice is sterling. The unalloyed purity of her high notes.
Except when they kind of split in half and they're going...
Well, that's what I mean. Well, it's alloyed. There's a little alloy in there. She needed more oil up in the alloy. Anyway, but... Okay, so it's the diction. It's the breathing in the middle of the words. But it's also, if she knows where the beat is, I'd like to know. Where is the beat? Is there a beat?
Well, I wonder if Howard Salat were there, if he were actually guiding her, if that would have helped.
Oh, she didn't need him. She had her hand on Verdi. I don't know what part.
That's the feeling I have, especially in the wonderful parlando sections. Well, you know, one would think that she's lost her way, but it is we who have lost our way.
She's leading us.
And she needs to guide us onto that rocky, craggy path.
And how rocky it is. My soul is ready to take it in. Oh.
Questo amor in buona terra. sarto vivo. Moce giungo, che profino ridiscendi il sacro luogo. Maledizione, maledizione, maledizione.
And what shall we play next? I really need your expert guidance on this question.
I think Donde Lieta, because the characterization she gives just from the very beginning of the phrase, it has a tentative quality that's the shy Mimi, but the way she does it is by slowing down in places where you're not supposed to. And it's genius.
Who says you're not supposed to? Does she have an equal affinity with Puccini as she does with Verdi? Or do you find she's superior in one or the other?
She goes beyond style. We can't think petty. We can't think low, earthly concerns like rhythm, style, the actual pronunciation of the words. We can't think those things. We just have to loftier goals. That's what she's going for, lofty.
And this is why I say it really is the music of an alternate universe.
It's the music of the spheres. Let's face it, when we all get to heaven, we're going to hear Marie Lynn. We got to get used to it right now. I've got my seatbelt ready for it.
Okay, so let's listen to the Donde Lieta. Ingenue.
She redefines ingenue.
Well, you know,
she's an ingenue. She's like Aunt Genue. I don't know. About the ingenue?
Aunt Genue.
Okay, now she's not an ingenue, she's an ingenue. Maybe she's your Aunt Janu.
Or an ancient Gnu.
She's
either Aunt Janu or ancient Gnu.
One of the things that is particularly salient that she particularly does well is that she delineates the register breaks. You know, as some people foolishly try to smooth them over, she says, no, honey, here's my, I'm going to put it in right in your face. And she doesn't just have one or two. She's got four or five register breaks.
Sometimes on the same note.
That's right. That's right. Why make it smooth? I want a rocky road. She's exciting. I just think that, why smooth it out? And also, why wait for the chord to resolve? Just go ahead and finish the phrase. You got other things to do.
We're going to listen to the Ave Maria. We'll talk about that later. But let's listen to, gosh, I don't know. We did hear a little bit of the Caro Nome at the top of the episode, but there's another Gilda excerpt that she recorded that must be heard to be believed, I think. The less commonly excerpted, Tutte le feste al tempio. And I think she has a really distinctive feel for this aria.
She puts the stink in distinctive.
Yes, she puts the stink. Oh my God, that's great. But also, I want you all, dear listeners, to delight in, you know, the way that she often gets a signal from Verdi to rewrite certain passages, not just in terms of the way that the words are pronounced or cut into different pieces, but also just to add high notes here and there, like she does at the end of Tutte le feste.
Well, it's 19th century music.
Well, she treats us to a beautiful high C at the end of this aria, which I dare say Lily Pons didn't even do.
Sometimes she puts a high note in that's not even in the chord.
At that part, where it goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it goes into C major there, so it's just begging to have a high C inserted. And thank goodness
delivers.
She followed her inner lights there.
That's right. That's right. I wonder if the listeners heard the chest voice and how she uses that for the maximum artistic... Renata Tivaldi couldn't have done it like that.
No, she couldn't.
She just veers. You know how... Have you ever driven in a snowstorm and then all of a sudden the tires, all of a sudden, oops, where the hell am I? That's her approach to the chest voice. You know, she's going off the rails.
I always call that a vocal hydroplaning. I mean, so it could also happen when you're driving in any kind of inclement weather. It can be ice. It can be just a massive rainstorm, you know, some sort of thing
Something
like
that.
But yes, and you put on the brakes and you feel you're losing control and everything starts spinning
speaking
around.
Speaking of losing control.
Control is overrated at any rate.
Oh, I think so. That's right. You know, her sense of rhythm, I was reminded of something that happened to me, which actually happened. I was in, I'm not going to say which music festival I was in, but I was listening to the dress rehearsal of the Scenes programs where the young artists were holding forth their various talents. And one of them, let's just face it, he had zero sense of rhythm. Is there anything less than zero?
Well, you could say he had a negative sense of rhythm.
That might have complimented him, though. I sit next to a very famous manager, and I said, he can't count. He doesn't know where in the bar. He doesn't have any sense of rhythm. And the manager said, without a shred of irony, he said he has his own inner sense of rhythm. Okay, so inner rhythm is not like inner beauty or some other inner tubes. It's very hard to discern, but I suppose that that's what she has, is she has an inner sense of rhythm. It's not an outward sense.
Also, you know, we live in the age of alternate facts. You can also have alternate rhythm.
That's okay. That's right. You've hit it.
So I think as an example of that, we should really listen to the Ave Maria. Don't you think that's a good example of that?
My soul needs it.
Okay, mine too.
And listeners, listen to the way she ends this thing.
It's
like a cadenza.
Again, it's a Verdi rewrite that outdoes Verdi.
It works. I wish that people would add it.
On some level, it works.
Credit her, at least.
Anyway. In our alternate universe, it absolutely works.
Yes.
Eletta fra gli sposi e le vergini sei tu. Sia benedetta il frutto, oh benedetta di tu materna viscere Gesù. Thank you.
What are we going to end the episode with, first of all? Maybe the...
Ritorna vincitor.
Okay, but since we're on the topic of Verdi, I think we can skip the Visi d'arte and the Un bel dì. Do you think either of those are...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll skip those.
The listener can just imagine the crazy rhythm, the diction that has nothing to do with it. Yet it's like faux Italian.
You know what? I should tell people. If they want to, they can send me $100.
How about $1,000? It's worth $1,000. I think Marie Lynn deserves no less.
So you said we'll end with the Ritorna Vincitor? Oh, yes.
That's pretty good.
But we really must play now, then, the O Patria Mia. Yeah,
okay.
I have a special place.
Yeah, oh, wait, the second verse.
Aida is so tortured, she's so tormented, and...
We feel that torture in this.
Yes, and how better to express that than simply abandoning... Think of the end of Act Two of Tosca.
She has a mind unhampered by sanity at that point.
But he writes out on the note D, E avanti a lui tremava tutta Roma... Who sings it that way? Don't they usually resort to speech?
Well, this is what you have to do. You have to, the word tutta, you have to go up, you know, like a dog barking. E avanti a lui, tremava tutta Roma. Like that.
Oh, that's good.
Wait, what was the one that you and I were talking about? Oh, it was in Butterfly. Ah, no, no questo mai. You know how the dog barks.
You said you were sure that you had heard someone do that.
Natalia De Andrade, who was one of Marie Lynn's few competitors.
She was last year's alternate universe diva. I must confess that I have a preference for Natalia. I find her to be the greater artist. She is an artist to her fingertips. She's an artist to her toenails.
She's an artist to the Lee press-on nails.
No, Natalia has
okay,
real
okay,
nails.
Okay, excuse me. Excuse me.
Marie
right.
Lynn has the Lee press-on nails. Come
Forgive
on.
Me.
With all that costume jewelry all over her chunky little hands.
Maybe that's where she got the money, because she invented Lee press-on nails. Maybe it's Marie Lynn press-on nails.
Oh my God, we were talking yesterday about Turandot length.
Turandot is all about the red nails. They gotta be half a foot, and you gotta be able to cross your hands. See, at the wrist, so that, and then with the fingers outstretched. And if you don't do that, you don't know how to sing Turandot.
And I'm sorry, but Marie Lynn
she
never
done
sang
Turandot,
but Natalia did. She recorded In Questa Reggia.
I've never heard that.
Well, I think if I can dig it up, I will just insert it into this episode, because I don't
Please.
Think I played it last year. If I can find it, I'll put it in there, okay? An immortal coil. Yes.
All right, so coil us in with this. Which
okay,
one is
so
this?
I'm
going to
try and play that if I can find it. But meanwhile, okay. Now let's... Yeah. What I was going to say about,
yeah.
about Marie Lynn is... Nobody sings E avanti a lui.
Oh, right.
And so what Marie Lynn does in the central section of the aria
right.
is she resorts to Sprechstimme.
That's
because
right.
how else to express Aida's inner torment than by actually speaking it?
That's right.
Than
That's
simply
right.
singing it. My pew,
right.
my pew, ti rivedrò. No.
That's right.
You just got to listen to what Marie Lynn does. And this is one of her greatest touches of genius.
It's definitely imaginative.
Yes, it's imaginative. Aren't we just saying that opera singers should be thinking more about their brand?
Well, in this day and age of uniformity, we need to celebrate, study, venerate, and push on the public. Just push on the public. Artists like Marie Lynn, just so they know what they're missing when they go hear these cookie cutter 1, 2, 3, 4 types.
Oh my goodness. We just can't
there
have
There is
that
no 1, 2, 3, 4 in Marie.
That's right. I mean, it's her own, what did we call it? Alternate rhythm, right?
Let's hear it.
Oh, No. No. My Pew. My Pew.
I was actually able to find my recording of Natalia de Andrade singing In Questa Reggia from Turandot. I have to say, it's not her finest moment. I believe this was her last quote-unquote published recording. You know, Natalia, I devoted most of my alternate universe bel canto episode to Natalia last year. I think she's a much more tragic figure than Marie Lynn. She was a figure of mockery, and yet she never really understood that. She remained completely convinced of her own brilliance as an artist and as a vocalist. She ended her life in a nursing home where she kept promising to give a concert for the staff and residents, which never actually transpired. It was not a happy end. It was not a terribly happy life. But as with so many of the greatest artists, Muzio, Piaf, Callas, her life was also not one full primarily of joy. And yet, to those of us who listen to her even years after her death, she continues to bring us so much joy. At least she has to me and to those of us who really buy into her kind of artistry, even when the voice was nearly 100% shot, as it is in this Turandot excerpt. Nevertheless, just by way of comparison and contrast, I wanted you to be able to hear both of these great divas in one episode. To paraphrase the old ad from my childhood, two divas in one.
Thank you.
So that was just a little bit of late career Natalia to compare with Marie Lynn. But now let's finish up this episode. And what are we going to end with? I think you had a specific request. Did you not?
Okay, have we done Ave Maria and Pace Pace?
We did the Pace Pace. We did the Ave Maria. So clearly she really has more of a direct line to Verdi. I think we've established that. And you wanted the other Aida aria.
Oh, Ritorna Vincitor.
And can you explain why you think that's an appropriate ender to this episode?
Well, I think that, okay, it, like everything she does, has all of the characteristics that we think of for Marie Lynn, just in the sound thing. You don't have to see her. You don't have to see the wigs. You don't have to see her staring at the music stand. You don't even have to hear her talking about the music. It's the diction, the rubato, the unalloyed purity of the high notes, the little Italianate turns she puts in there to make it more Italian. The chest voice, the breathing in the middle of the word, it's got all of that.
Yeah, it does. And you know, I mean, we've just been talking about how important it is for singers to brand themselves. And she certainly did do that. But she takes her brand and she puts it right
onto the music. She sticks it right
on
that page.
It's like a cattle brand.
That's right. Marie Lynn was here.
That's why I've entitled this episode, by the way, The Golden Treasury of Chutzpah, because I think that
that's good.
Yeah, I think she had that more than anything else.
She must have.
Apart from any of her vocal gifts.
But can you imagine, though, before we hear Return Victorious, if she, Natalia de Andrade, and Rosina Wolf had done the final trio from Rosenkavalier?
Oh, I think that's beyond their fach, though, don't you?
No, I think the three of them together would have been magic.
Well, you've heard that creator's record of the trio, haven't you?
Oh, it would be beyond that.
What we associate with Richard Strauss singing these days.
We're incorrect in our assumptions.
Well, I know. And who knows? I mean, Marie Lynn could have been of the age that she was alive during Verdi's time, and maybe she coached directly with him.
I think she probably did.
In our alternate universe, this is a fact.
This is the way it worked.
Yes, she worked directly with Verdi, posthumously.
Forget Toscanini.
Before we play it, I just want to thank you, Thomas Bagwell, for joining me today. It's been such a joy. We did this completely impromptu. I think it's going to make for a much more engaging episode than if I were simply to have come on here and blah, 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 as I usually do. So,
well, you know, we're just as crazy as it gets.
Well, not quite, because it does get a little crazier.
That's the way to do it.
There we have Marie Lynn, the craziest of them all. Thank you, Thomas.
This has been fun. Fun, fun, fun.
Di miei fratelli, onde io lo veda, tinto del sangue amato, se io incorrendo, so dalle gizia ancora te, e dietro il caro, onde lì, io frodo, e così, io vedo, Insania corona, andava mi spirteti, consegna, non potremo figlia, mi deve, fuggiorti, mi squadri, dai nostri oppresso. Sventurata che dissi,
Thank you.
crudelan doce ancora pranto.
My dear listeners, as I always say, keep the song in your hearts, especially in this instance. Keep it there. Don't let it out. You're going to alarm people. So keep the song in your hearts, for Christ's sake. I'm Daniel Goodluck.
I'm Thomas Bagwell.
Yay! Thank you so much, everybody. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm turning us off now. I think we've gone on at
great enough length.
Yay.